And it's KBC Arts Now on KBCR. Arts and entertainment, as well as the people and places providing it. I'm Adam Rainey Ruiz, and on this edition of the program, we'll hear from Dwan Keelum, who is one of the curators for the Black and Brown Inland Empire and Beyond exhibit at the Altura Credit Union Community Gallery at the Cheech. Before we dive into the exhibit, I would like to know about who you are as an artist. So, Dwan, you were born in Trenton, New Jersey, relocated here in 69 in Redlands at the Norton base because your father was an instructor at the NCO base.
Yes.
Anyone else in your family from the military, or was your father like the first one to?
I had other uncles that were in the military, but I think his older brother went in at one time. Then on my mom's side, her brother and a couple of uncles were in the military.
With having, you know, family as well as friends growing up in the community, were you ever pressured in or even thought of joining the military growing up?
Very much so. Very much so. My dad was trying to get my brother and I to join the military. He would say, you guys would make great officers, because he wanted to be an officer. And at the time, there was so much discrimination that he was dissuaded, coerced, applications thrown away. So he always thought you guys would be great officers, military. And no, I wasn't getting up at 4 o'clock in the morning to have someone yell at me and tell me to run around. I respect what they do, but it, you know, I think the closest was I took the ASVAB in high school just to get out of class. It was a 3-hour test.
Oh.
That's the student I was.
You've accomplished a lot. I got your bachelor's in political science and your master's. Multi-interdisciplinary.
Multidisciplinary studies.
Multi-inter
education, yes.
So when did that spark hit you? Like, I want to do art. Was there like a specific spark or just like a series that were like both?
I don't think there was any one time where it was just like I've always been hands-on. I've always been creative. I was a kid that would take the radio apart to see how it worked. I was the one who built my own bikes, fixed the lawnmower, put up fences. One summer, my dad bought an aluminum shed and said, this is your project for the summer. You need to be up by the time you go back to school. And I fixed the vacuum. I was always making, and I do have a couple of things from when I was third, fourth grade, books I did, comic books I did. But it was just an outlet. I really never thought about pursuing it as a career. I would think at that time, if you would have asked me, that 6-7-year-old Dwan, what do you want to be when you grow up? I would say play. That's all I want to do. And now I am so fortunate I get to play every day.
Being an artist, it's very hard. You have to grind. Mm-hmm. You have to keep creating and everything. How do you work that muscle out to keep pushing yourself to keep creating things? Or is it just natural?
It goes in spurts. It's kind of feast or famine. And I've done it enough to realize it goes in cycles. I used to freak out when I would have those kind of droughts in creativity. But now I embrace it. I use those droughts as times to kind of like work that muscle, as in doing artistic exercises versus creating pieces. I'll go through a spurt while I'll be working on 3, possibly 4 pieces at a time, but that's me.
What types of art do you do?
Initially, I started out screen printing. Always wanted to do that. Was able to do it much later in life, in my mid-30s, when I was adulting and had money to buy my own equipment and take classes. But I'm a self-taught screen printer. Did t-shirts, started a line. That kind of just didn't blow up. It's still there. Then I started doing posters. I would say that my art, even on t-shirts, had a lot of social, political, environmental issues attached to it. Started doing posters, and then during the pandemic, there wasn't a demand. I wasn't going to art fairs or anything of that, so I didn't have a platform to really push the posters. So I took that time to start painting, and helping me with my artistic patience, working on my hand detail. And I started doing, I would say, a mini mural cutout. And then I started doing stencils. That's when I came up with the character, the concept, the bomb, which I just had a show with at the African American Alliance. And then from there, I somehow got pulled into the mural world. And I assisted on a mural here in San Bernardino at Project Fighting Chance. And then that turned into helping with the community mural at Soul Alley that was led by Music Changing Lives, which led into helping my friend in downtown Hollywood and Vine during the summer of 2020, where they did the all Black Lives Matter mural on Hollywood Boulevard. So we were assisting with that, doing murals, and then did a mural for a show, and finally did my, I would say, my first solo big mural at Soul Valley at the end of where we have our business, Creative Grounds.
You've said so many things. I'm like, I have so many questions about.
Go for it.
One of them was actually, I checked out your page and everything at, also I got to say, love the website name, theoneandonly.com.
Yes.
Love it. There, that's when I saw that page from the exhibit you just did, which was called Why Does Everybody Have the Bomb?
Yes.
And you created that character and everything that has different entities. It can be good, it can be evil, it can come in the form of the child or just one's reflection. I love the piece, All Work. It's the bomb, and it's like from Stanley Kubrick's The Shining, because it just says all work and no play makes the bomb a dull bomb.
Yes.
I love those pieces, and if anyone's interested, you can check it out at his website, theoneandonly.com, and I saw that you still have prints available.
Yes.
Really love them. They're all very strong, passionate. I saw, like, I think Abby Day.
The Abby Day.
So I saw the inspiration days, yes, from that mural that you posted. I'm like, that's so cool, because it's bright, strong colors, a very bold choice, but I love it. What made you come up with those characters and those different personas?
The character was actually something I had been playing with, and it was in my sketchbook. And as I was saying, during the pandemic, I started stenciling and painting. So I just happened to be flipping through my sketchbook, and I came across the bomb. And the bomb is actually based on another set of characters that I did before, which is the orange fist and the peace sign and all three of them, the middle finger. And you know, I really didn't have a name for it, but I made stickers and we were traveling, and I was giving them out, and I gave it to a group of kids, and this one kid goes, "Mira, es un puño con patas." And so that became the official name, Puño con Patas, for the orange one. But so that's the basis for the bomb. That first night when I first cut the first stencil, I made three of them right then and there.
Wow.
Using spray paint, waiting for it to dry. So it gives me time to work on another idea, and they just keep growing and growing.
No, I love it. Again, the Stanley Kubrick one, just I love, because it's just that all over again, and it's on like a notepad and everything.
Yes.
You can tell it's like, it's a kid's and they give their doodles and everything in the heart. Also, jumping a little back and forth, you opened up an art studio in 2003, Schoolboys. What made you decide to open that up?
That was the t-shirt brand, Schoolboys.
Yeah.
I always wanted to screen print. Even when I was here at Valley, that actually, the Schoolboys concept was actually created here at Valley.
Oh, wow.
I was in the theater arts building with some friends, and we were just talking about things, and I came up with that idea. It's a t-shirt brand, social, political, environmental issues. It still exists, but in a different form. I ran that out of my house until we actually opened up the actual physical building, Creative Grounds. So it's an entity. Creative Grounds is the physical space. Schoolboys is the screen printing element. And then, you know, Upa, my studio partner, has his studio art there. And then as an independent artist, I just go by Duan and Only, just to keep things separated. But it's really all just Duan.
Oh, Duan. So why did you decide to open up a studio in San Bernardino instead of your hometown in Redlands?
My studio partner, we met many years ago at a community event, and we kept in touch, and we were doing, you know, some screen printing jobs together. And one day out of the blue, he says, "I've got this chance to get this studio space. Are you interested?" And without seeing anything, I said, "Yeah, let's do it." But if you would have asked me the day before, "Duan, you're going to have a physical art studio," I would have been like, "You're crazy." But it's been such a great blessing, Creative Grounds, and the community that supports us.
So when you first moved here, let's say like when you're six, what would your parents think about this? Like, were they ever supportive of you being an artist?
They're both deceased, but they are very, very supportive. My parents were always at marvel of my creativity. Like I said, I would literally ask for bike parts for Christmas so I could build my own bike. I have uncles who are just superhumans, where they're electricians, plumbers, carpenters. My grandfather built their first house, you know, he and his brothers, my uncles. And so there is a lineage of creativity, hands-on, other uncles that are self-taught musicians and singers. So that element of creativity runs on my maternal side. Fortunately, both of my parents did get to see my art practice at some point. My mother passed this time of year last year, so she got to see and actually participate in some of the art activities. She got to go to the opening of the mural reveal at Project Fighting Chance. She actually helped me with the piece I did for Chaffey College, When We Move. It's a sculpture. And so she got to see a lot of this. She participated in a Kwanzaa event I did. So it was really exciting. And so she was just blown away because they were concerned about, I think I was telling you earlier, I was not a motivated student. I wasn't a bad student. I just did enough to get by. You know, fly under the radar. That's all the stealth plane needs to do. And so they were worried about me post high school. But in their words, I went beyond their wildest dreams because they're like, what's this kid gonna do? All he wants to do is play.
Same way I was a student, I would just stayed under the radar. And, you know, after high school, my parents were worried. You know, sometimes they're like, I think they just said, you just gotta trust the process. I'm really glad that you got that support, especially from your mother, just to be there. Mm-hmm. Sorry for your loss. I know it's always hard. I heard you talk about the Kwanzaa piece, and I love that piece because it's like a big puzzle combined into one, and each piece has a different meaning that's part of the Kwanzaa tradition. Was that like a project that someone asked you to do, or was that just out of your own free will, or how did that project come off?
It was a commission. There's a conference held annually at Chaffey near the end of October, beginning of November, called Black and Brown Minds Matter. And myself and another artist were commissioned that year to do a piece. The only criteria was that the president wanted to be at least 7 feet tall and address the 7 principles of Kwanzaa. So I took those and looked at the equivalent of the Adinkra, West African symbols, their meanings, and incorporated that into it. And I use, I guess you would say, I'm known for the blobs or the abstract shapes. So I incorporated African designs, symbols, motifs on those with various colors. And a couple of the colors, I tried to go as natural as possible. So the one where it's majority black, that black comes from charcoal. So I was experimenting with different materials, making my own, I guess you say, paint tints with natural materials. The one that's predominantly green was actually made out of collard greens. So I have a garden at home. So I took the leftover leaves, I blended them, strained it, and then reduced it and added a binder to it. Again, experimentation, and used that for the paint color for that.
Oh my God. 7 feet tall, that's...
Yeah. So yeah, I hooked up together puzzle pieces, and some of the pieces actually move independently. So the piece on top is like actually balanced in like a little cup, like a point and receiver. And so it's balanced on that. And the other, there's another piece that's connected with a dowel.
Again, you have a lot on your resume. I can talk about a lot of your work. The one that I think is really cool that I just saw the other day was the Black and Brown in the Inland Empire and Beyond exhibit which can be seen at the Altura Credit Union Community Gallery at the Cheech. You and Sochi Flores created like a series of workshops to help people project their visions and everything and share their story. How did you guys come up with that idea of this exhibit?
I grew up in Redlands on the north side. And if you know anything about Redlands, the north side traditionally was where the Black and Brown people lived. I lived on a street called Francis Street. The neighborhood I grew up in was very much people of color, Mexican-American, South Asian, Korean, Mexican nationals, African-Americans. A very working class neighborhood. Many of the people were entrepreneurs, meaning they were carpenters, contractors, landscapers. Some of them were civil servants working at Norton or for the county or state. So it was a working class neighborhood, but it was home ownership. And that's where it started, really. I remember in high school, we would all hang out together, blacks and browns. We would party together. In my mind's eye, that's how I thought everything was. Fast forward 15, 20 years later, you hear about these black-brown conflicts. You hear these fights at middle schools, high schools. So doing the show had always been on my mind. Meeting and starting to work with Xochitl, who's the founder of Vision Tolteca, a local artist. We were talking about this, and I pitched it on the fly at the Cheech. I was in a previous show, a community show there. And they said, you know, do a proposal. And, you know, they just kicked the can down the road. But as I I started working with Sochil, you know, we're like, I think we could pull this off. So we did a formal proposal, submitted it to the Cheech. We had a meeting. They loved the idea. And then we were off. And it's a big endeavor. It started off with a series of workshops in different communities within the Inland Empire that address issues that affect Black and Brown communities, education, housing, employment, the environment, movement, and migration. And we had those meetings, one here at Valley College with Professor Ed Gomez, one at the Civil Rights Institute with Dr. Mexico, Mrs. Williams from Black Voice News, and Dr. Jen Tilton. And then we had one at Casa Pitzer with Dr. Bruce Grill from Pitzer College, and then one at the Cheech with KVCR's Anthony, and so he did environmental issues. And at the end of each workshop, we had a little art component, which we had the participants do. And the rationale behind that was we invited artists and the community to hear these stories, to become educated, or to contribute to the dialogue of these issues, because we realize that everybody's entering this at different levels. Some people are at like the equivalent to a preschool level of knowledge or history of that, and other people are postdoctorate. So we want to have everybody to have a basic level. And then however further deep they would want to dig in these issues than they could as artists.
How did you help these artists create their vision? How did that work out?
A lot of these stories were new to the artists, specifically just because generationally, I'm 58, so there's a big gap between myself and a 22, 23-year-old artist knowing the history about the Inland Empire or things that had even gone on. So it opened their eyes to things that I took for secondhand knowledge. But in addition, I learned things as well. This project really opened my eyes and my mind to the vast history we have here in the Inland Empire that we are just, I would say, scratching the surface. And by that, I mean putting in the public view. The People's History does a great job at that. And I know many educators who do that as well. But we need to do more and have more platforms for this knowledge to be addressed.
I saw your piece, the IE Monopoly, which I love because it's just all in an empire. And there's a lot of things people could relate to, like you live in a fire zone. It's a hazard. My parents keep getting denied, even though it's just like they're not really in a fire zone, but they're just labeled as one. So, yeah, I definitely see the struggle in that. But one thing that really just caught my eye was on the Monopoly card, you created a community coffix card, and it was said, court rules in favor of Lopez and public pool discrimination case. And I had no idea what that was.
I got goosebumps you said that. I did not know that either. During the workshop at Valley College, Professor Ed Gomez had mentioned that. And also, I believe someone at the Civil Rights Institute mentioned that, and I had no idea. I thought I was pretty knowledgeable because I was familiar with Mendez versus Westminster, which was the precursor to Brown v. Board of Education. But when I found out that this was a major case here, and then there is a reenactment of the case held at La Meet La Cafe, I believe it's on one of the public stations as well. You can watch that, a reenactment of the case. And it's just like, oh my God. Because growing up in Redlands, I heard stories. There was a public pool called the Sylvan Plunge, which I went to as a kid. But the generation before me, they had those very same stories. One day a week, it was the Black and Brown Day. And then they drained it, cleaned it, and filled it up. And for the following 6 days, it was segregated. Those are stories that are here. This isn't, you know, Montgomery, Alabama, or any place like that. This is right here in where we live, in our own backyard.
And just to, for the audience, just to inform them, the Lopez family sued this pool because they were felt discriminated against. And it's crazy to think that this is one of the stepping stools to Mendez versus Westminster and Brown versus the Board of Education, because they broke down that barrier. And to think that this happened in the Inland Empire in San Bernardino, and it's just never talked about. And I'm really glad that you brought that to our, at least to my attention. Whoever checks out this exhibit will read the card, because I'm I did the research and then I zoomed in on the picture and it, you already had like the little summary of it. I'm like, oh, I should have just looked a little closer. But, you know, even with the whole piece itself, I loved everything. It was like, oh, you know, this is baseline. Even like some of the pieces, like you had a gun. Mm-hmm. It's one of the Monopoly pieces. Why'd you choose that piece?
We're uncovering all these histories, all this beauty that we have here in the IE, but there is a sobering fact that we can't dodge, that gun violence does play a part, at the very least, the reputation of the IE. How deep that goes, I don't know, but at the opening of the show, I was approached by a young man in his 30s wanting to collaborate, do some things, and I invited him to Creative Grounds. And he's a transplant from the East Coast to Riverside. And he said, I was told not to go to San Bernardino, that it's just too dangerous. And we have been at Creative Grounds for 5 years and we have not had any incidents. A lot of that is just situational, you know, observation awareness. There are good and bad places. There are better places. There are worse places. And again, you just got to be aware of where you're going. And unfortunately, we have that reputation. And that was part of me as an artist. I'm like, I'm being real about these other things going on here. I'm going to be real about that.
Very powerful, even though it's like, oh, Monopoly, it's a game piece. But if you really look into it and dissect it, you put a lot of detail into it. And just not just about San Bernardino, but the whole Inland Empire from baseline to Mount Vernon. Like,
thank you.
Put a lot of detail. I really love it. And a lot of the other pieces there really just left me speechless. The one done by Jesse Ramirez, Cuando Vuela Papa.
Yeah. Oh.
That, beautiful. I'm not going to go into too much detail because I want you, the listeners, to check it out because it's a really well done piece. They all are. They're all super relevant, but with everything going on with the ice raids, you know, some people just not showing up.
And if you look deep into that piece, it's just a different level when that background hits you. And then it's just like, again, I'm getting goosebumps because that's one of the things, and I can say for myself, I can speak for Soch, that I'm proud of, that the artists were able to capture, I would say, the truest essence of the IE with their pieces. And it just speaks volumes.
Again, if you look closer into the background and you see what it is, then the image of just holding that toy that you would probably assume that the dad gave him, mm-hmm. where's dad? I'm like, oh, that hurt. Because I'm a father. I'm like, man, I can't imagine it happening. And I feel bad for anyone that's dealt with this. Another piece that I really loved, please help me, correct me if I'm wrong, Yuleti Ordonez and her piece on the Catawba Avenue, which it's a three-dimensional model, and I really loved it because it forces you to get down on your knees and look in like,
Jules is, I call her by her artist name, Jules.
Jules.
Every time I see her, because she comes around the studio, and I've been to the Cheech probably about 4 times since the opening, and I'd like to go there and observe and see how the public interacts with pieces. And there's always a person or group of people around hers and looking at it. And she's an amazing artist. I mean, you can tell the time, effort, and care she put into that piece, but the narrative of what it tells is just powerful, and it speaks volumes, specifically because if you're familiar with IE and the history of Fontana, and then the narrative attached to that, it's just like,
yeah, it's heavy. Back to the exhibit.
Yeah.
Back to the exhibit. This one with the model, you can look on the outside and you can see the story and you read the paragraph mm-hmm. that she wrote. Very powerful. I'm not going to say what it is because, again, I want you, the listeners, to check it out. But to help you guys out to appreciate this piece more is I loved how you had to get down, you know, just do a little squat and look through the windows.
Yes.
And I'm like, oh, my God, what?
Yeah. Yeah,
that is,
what's on the walls inside, and just again, just amazing. She just put a lot into that piece, and it shows. And I'm just so happy and proud of her for creating it and being a part of the show.
I'm really glad she did that piece, and then that story really screams community, because in this case, her neighbor was there to, you know, help him out. Didn't have any kind of, you know, communication relationship with them before that, but it was just an unspoken bond, like, I got you, you got me. This is our community.
Mm-hmm.
I'm really glad you guys are here doing this. I really do appreciate you guys' work, because it's not easy being an artist, coming up with these ideas, but executing the ideas too is really hard to do. There are a lot of pieces I could talk about, but I think you, the listeners, should check it out. You could go out to the Cheech, which is downtown Riverside, and this exhibit will be at the Altura Credit Union Community Gallery. How long will this exhibit be up for?
It'll be up until March 15th, and I would encourage people to come out and check it out. Come out on Art Walk, which is the first Thursday of every month in Riverside. They won't be having it on January because that's the first, but they will be having first Sundays, and those are free to the public. So if you're worried about just paying the fees, come on those days. We're also going to be doing some additional programming until the end of the show, so keep a lookout. We'll be publishing that probably mid-first of the year. We're still just confirming dates, but we're going to be doing some programming at the Cheech, possibly other venues connected to the show. So,
all right, cool. And so where can people find you and your work, or if they want to check out your stuff, where can they find you?
You can get a glimpse of some of my personal art at Dwan and Only on my website. I also have an Instagram, Dwan and Only, and I can't think right now if it's the same spelling just because different platforms. Also follow us at Creative Grounds on Instagram. No I, the little yellow dot. My screen printing endeavor is Schoolboyz, S-K-O-O-L, B as in baby, O-I-Z.com, and the same on Instagram. On our Creative Grounds Instagram, we do have a monthly calendar, so you can see what's going on. We have things we're programming right now for the first part of 2026. So we have some big things coming on. We have an art show coming up in January. My partner, Upa, is doing a solo show at Creative Grounds. Then we're doing an African-American artist show in February. And many things throughout. We have the Art of Breathing, where we work with different organizations. So yeah, I would say just follow us. And there's a lot going on.
Cool. Well, thank you for coming down to the station. I know you're a busy bee, so I really do appreciate your time and just chatting with me about your work and stuff that's going on in the IE. I really do appreciate it.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you.
All right. Bye-bye.
If you're interested in checking out the other pieces at this exhibit at the Altura Credit Union Community Gallery at the Cheech, you have until March 15th. If you're interested in Dwan and his work, you can check out his website at dwanandonly.com or his Instagram at dwan_and_only or the Creative Ground Studios at CreativeGrounds. You can also find these links on this week's episode at kvcrnews.org/shows/kvcarts. And with that, we wrap up another edition of KVC Arts. Thanks again, Dwan Kalem, for joining us. I also want to thank David Fleming, Anthony Victoria, Gil Reese, Irma Villa Reese, Anne Rainey, Delia David, and everyone at the KVCR station. Many past episodes can be found through iTunes, NPR One, Google Podcast, and Spotify. Most past shows can be found at kvcrnews.org/shows/kvcarts. I'm Adam Rainey Ruiz, and thanks especially you for listening and for your support.